Hello, and welcome to the Drama and Language Teaching Podcast. This is a podcast for teachers, practitioners, and researchers, and anyone else interested in the intersections between drama and theater and language teaching and learning. My name is Stephanie Giebert. I'm the host and producer of this podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. This episode's guest is Ron Freitag, who is a teacher, trainer, and researcher at the University of Braunschweig in Germany. And I would leave it to him to introduce himself. So welcome to the podcast.
Okay, hi. As Steffi just said, my name is Ron Freitag. I'm a researcher and a teacher trainer at the University of Braunschweig. And I focus a lot on performative teaching. And this is why I ended up being here in this podcast.
Okay, great. Thank you. My first question is usually, how did you get to drama and education?
Mm-hmm. That's a very big question and a big thing to answer. And I will actually start at my own time at school, because back then in school, I was very bad in my foreign languages. I learned English and French. And it resulted in me actually hating English and French. And at the same time, at my school time, I had the subject Darstellendes Spiel, it's called in Germany, so performing arts. And I just always literally felt myself, and I felt like here I can be the person that I want to be, and I can express myself, and I have ways of expressing myself. I just finished school with this feeling of I hate English and I hate French, but I love theater. And then I went abroad, and I actually lived in Australia for a while. And this is where I learned all of my English skills in the end. And at the same time, I always knew that I wanted to be a teacher or become a teacher. But I never was sure about which subjects I'm going to teach. So in the end, in Australia, I had to choose which subjects to teach. And because I got fluent in English, I was like, okay, that's convenient. Let's do English. And then I started studied English and German to become a teacher for gymnasiums, so high schools in Germany, also at the same university that I'm working at now. And, you know, like I did the normal thing of studying the bachelor's and the master's. And then in my bachelor's, I had one seminar where there was a lecture about didactics meeting the, what is it called? Like the subject itself. So in the end, literary studies. And then there was this colleague of mine, and we're still colleagues now, and she's very interested into theater. And then there was this colleague from the didactic department that was interested in how to apply this into like in school theater. And this is how I actually got into it. And then it got me thinking, why not combining, like also thinking back to my own time, why not combining this foreign language lessons that were quite hard for me, where I felt like I need to hate English or French, with theater, where I felt very good in the end. And back then, like many, many years ago, I wrote my first portfolio about it. And then I I read all these articles that everyone knows, like from Schaefer, and, you know. And in the end, I never actually went away from this topic, because in the end, I decided also to write my master's thesis on this, because I not just studied German and English, but also did like a extra program on German as a foreign language. So in this area, I wrote my master thesis, and I focused on drama and theater pedagogical approaches in the foreign language classroom. And I originally wanted to do something in school and to try it out and to have it like as a basis for my master thesis. But in the end, COVID came and I was not able to do it. So I interviewed a couple of teachers from all around the world, and basically found out disadvantages and advantages of drama and theater pedagogical approaches. And this in the end got me to where I'm at now. So I'm ended up here at university, also working in both departments. So I'm working in the English department and the German as a foreign language department. And I'm very happy that I'm able to do that, because this is the reason why I can not only do my performative drama teaching things in one subject, but in two subjects. And in the end, I also had to find my or like a topic for my PhD. And this is why I'm also writing my PhD on this topic of how to use performative art forms in the foreign language classroom.
Okay, thank you very much for describing your journey, which has a very a personal component I can hear. And it's really interesting that you have the perspective of a student who didn't love foreign languages at first, but who loved theater and who found a connection, or found a way into foreign languages through theater. That's really interesting. And also that you say you have both English as a foreign language and German as a foreign language as your teaching areas. So that might be interesting to talk about because I am also a teacher of German as a foreign or second language and a teacher of English as a foreign language, and I do try to use performative methods in both. So I have a similar I never hated foreign languages, but I also have these two perspectives from two languages. Yes. So thank you for describing that. And I think yes, it would be really interesting if you told us a bit more about your PhD project. And maybe then also about your current, let's say, practical work. So I assume that you also have, seminars for trainee teachers, probably in both for both languages. It would be really interesting if you could tell us about both fields a bit. So maybe you want to start with your research, and then maybe later talk a bit about your
Sure.
practical teaching work.
So when I started working here, I needed to find a topic, and I knew that I wanted to do it in the area of performative teaching using drama and so on. And then my PhD supervisor always said, you need to find this one little spot where no one has ever done something, and which was quite hard for me because I was always this kind of theater guy, and like sometimes it's even hard for oneself to actually look beyond this. And in the end, I like started the typical thing. Okay, what is drama and education? What is performative teaching and so on? And then I looked at these different definitions, and I actually found it very interesting that most of these definitions always say performative teaching or performative learning is based on different art forms. But basically, it always says it's based on drama and theater. And this is why I was like, okay, that's very interesting. Because then they always say, like, okay, you can include different art forms like, I don't know, podcast and music and so on. And it's also done all the time. But in the end, everyone always, I feel like everyone is always just focusing on either music or on podcast or on theater. So in the end, my project focuses on combining it in like in a bigger picture and still taking drama and theater pedagogical approaches as a basis, because there's so much research already around this area, that I like my research, like one of my research questions is, what can we actually learn from drama and theater used in foreign language teaching and learning for other performative art forms? So I'm basically now doing the step beyond this drama and theater approach. And in the end, I wasn't sure about what I'm exactly going to do in my PhD, but I started doing my seminars here, and they're always called performative foreign language didactics in the EFL classroom or German as a foreign second language classroom. And then I always do this typical things. Okay, why should we do performative things? Why should we get like include movement in our classroom and so on? And look at all these backgrounds. And then I always show them, because it's the biggest thing always going on, different things from drama and theater pedagogical projects. So we basically try out different methods and things in my seminar. But in the end, in my seminar, I always, like in the last couple of sessions, I always ask them to choose a different art form. And also in the beginning, we were like, okay, what are art forms? And we have a very broad, or I have a very broad definition of it. And then they choose one art form. Then they look at this distinction. I don't know if you know it, but this distinction between drama in education, drama education, theater education, and theater in education. And then they basically analyze this approach. And then they try to apply it to their chosen performative art form. Let's say, I don't know, dancing, but also this, like actually, we're doing it right now in my seminar, and one of them is focusing on cooking. Then I don't know, I had so many different art forms, karaoke, podcast, poetry slam, choir, whatever. And in the end, I did this seminar in both subjects a couple of times, and then I was actually thinking about why not taking this as a basis, as a starting point towards something more. So in the end, my PhD project focuses on perspective of future teachers on how to include different performative art forms outside of drama and theater into the classroom. So I basically did like a seminar evaluation on both of my seminars, and I did this last summer semester, so summer semester 2024. And I did some things before my seminar, some things afterwards, and some during. So before that, every one of my students, and I had 26, split up into my both seminars. They did like a questionnaire, questions like I can imagine. I did like exemplary art forms. For example, I can imagine how to include, for example, artistry into my foreign language lessons. And then the same questionnaire they did afterwards, but also beforehand, I did with 11 of these 26 people, I did an interview, and also with the same 20 with these with the same 11 people, I did interviews afterwards. And then during my seminar, they had to write logbook entries at four times after my four, like, let's say, blocks in my seminar. And in the last couple of sessions where they really got practical, when they chose one art form, they actually had discussions around, and I recorded them. But also me as a researcher and teacher at the same time, I wrote like research diaries where I documented everything. And also in these last couple of sessions where we basically tried out things, there were people from the outside that they weren't like they didn't know these people. They were watching and just making doing field notes. And this is in the end what I did. And it's a lot of data because I have 17, no, 18 hours of audio things going on, and all these questionnaires and so on. And I'm still in the struggle of how to combining it at all, and also still transcribing because it's a lot of work, 17 or 18 hours. But also last September, I was at a conference and I already presented first results, which were very, very interesting because in the end, all of my different instruments focus on, let's say, six different areas. And for now, I mostly dealt with one of these areas. And if you want, I can tell you a little bit more about one of these areas.
Yeah, sure. I mean, one question, your students, are they undergraduate students or master's students?
So,
Or a mixture?
yeah, sometimes this is quite hard because, of course, you are sometimes just allowed to teach in bachelor's or master's based on what you actually have to teach. So in English, I always have master students, whereas in German as a foreign language, it's not that easy to say because it's a extra program. They're either in the bachelor's or in the master's. But I think when I did this, when I did this whole instruments with all these data collection, I think half of the students were like in the bachelor's and half of them in their master's. But I actually found it very useful because then these, let's say, older students actually gave a lot of insight into things that they already did to the younger ones, let's say, and the other way around. So it was quite interesting.
And have they done work placements in schools already, or is that something that comes later during their studies?
That's also interesting because in the end, everyone who is doing the extra certificate for German as a foreign or second language, most of them do something on the side where they get paid for. So they
Okay.
do some tutoring or whatever, and they mostly have not done their practical training somewhere because it's just at the end of the certificate. Whereas the English students, many of them also work at schools, but they mostly don't do English lessons. They mostly do the other subjects or also German as a foreign language, funnily enough.
Okay, that's
So,
because of the sh teacher shortage. Is
exactly.
that so that e even students are already employed as teachers
Exactly.
nowadays,
So
right?
it's a very wild mix. And I also, before I chose, I didn't choose particularly, but before I actually got the students that I wanted to interview, I also collected like data from them, like where they are at in their studies, have they already experienced. So throughout these 11 people that I interviewed, it's like a mixture of everything, so that I have basically everything included in my in the people that I interviewed.
Yeah, but so many of them have already had practical experience being
Yes.
a teacher. Okay, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, so yeah, you offered to tell a little more about one area. So yeah, absolutely, go ahead.
Yeah. So as I said, my instruments basically focus on six different areas. There are more, but they are more on how I evaluated the seminar and the approach of teaching, because in the end, I also did a performative teaching myself in the seminar. But these six main areas focus on different perspectives of the students on something. So one of them is on the like the seminar topic, performative teaching in general. Then one of them is about the like more content-wise of the towards the seminar, like why should we get movement into the classes and so on. And then the one that I want to focus on is the perspective of students or future teachers on using different art forms other than drama and theater in the foreign language classroom. And it was very interesting to see that in the questionnaire, I did five exemplary performative art forms. I did theater, I did dance, artistry, podcast, and photography. And if you actually like, I also have like a graph of it. And if you actually look at it, you already see that with dance and artistry, there's like this very big red answer column of people saying, no, I cannot imagine at all including da dance or artistry into my performance in my foreign language classes. Whereas with theater, a little bit more, but not that much more, like because I had the possible answers of I fully agree, I agree, I partially agree, and I don't agree at all. And most of the people with theater answered I rather agree. And then with podcast and photography, it's like a mixture of I cannot imagine it or I can imagine it. And then if I already go like to the end, towards the end of my seminar, it basically changed. I mean, it's also a little bit obvious because we focused on different art forms. So it basically got more into the side of I agree or I fully agree. But the interesting thing is, if you just look at these questionnaire things, that with the art forms that are basically spoken themselves, they can agree it more. Whereas, for example, with dance or with an art form that they really don't know what is that, like artistry, they.
Yeah, could you explain a bit what how you define artistry? Because it's probably different people have different ideas of what it could be. Is it like connected to circus artistry?
So
Okay.
in my
Could
understanding, it's also connected to circus, and that's also what happened in my especially in the questionnaires, also in the interviews, that they were like, okay, what is artistry? So in German, artistic. And then I was always like, and this is also what it's about, that you actually find out for yourself what you understand for as different art forms.
Let's
So
see.
I wasn't saying I understand it at this and I want you to understand it like this. It's because in the end, a performative thing, just understand it the way you understand it. So as I said, with art forms that they weren't really sure about what they understand as it for themselves, it was harder for them to actually imagine something. So that I mean, also kind of obvious. And then in the end, I did, as I just told you, I did the questionnaires before and after, but I also did the interviews. And the interviews basically just because the questionnaires basically have like show me or give me quantitative data, the interviews gave me qualitative data. So in the end, I asked, okay, why can you not imagine including
Dance, for example.
dance, for example, but theater? And it's very interesting to see that almost all of them with their different backgrounds, even for the ones that had, for example, arts as a second subject, they said, I cannot imagine including an art form that is not spoken itself. So how can I do that? And why should I do that? And then afterwards in the seminar, like in the interview afterwards, they always told me that they like I literally opened the eyes, their eyes for them, because in the end, also if we include dance, there are many different ways, but Let's just include dance, and we're not talking to each other. We need to talk to each other in able to in order to make this dance performance happening. And also, then they also said, okay, I never like beforehand, I never thought about just learning about dance as a performative art form itself. I never imagined including dance as a way of basically transferring or like giving like getting a meaning across or whatever. So in the end, it was very interesting to see that I literally opened their eyes and just made it for them more imaginable to include other art forms. But the interesting thing is also that many of them also struggle to include theater because they always felt like in their own school time when they had to do something like with to connect it to theater, they felt like awkward and so on, based on its teachers just throwing it aside without any preparation and without any, they felt like it was just not that connected to everything else. And then also like in the end in the seminar we learned how to include it more and not to just basically, okay, you read out person A, you read out person B, and now we did theater. So it's and
Not as an isolated add-on that
exactly, yeah.
where
And of
maybe
course,
even students might wonder, why are we doing that now?
and of course, I try to at least encourage my students also to like sometimes at least think a little bit bigger to in the end also do like a big play or do a dance performance. Most of them in the end also interviewed said, I still don't really feel comfortable with doing like a big performance, but including small things in my lessons is something that I really want to do because it's just more lively and I feel like my students will feel more connected to the English language and feel like it's actually close to me as a student. And in the end, this is also what I gained it, that my like the perspectives of my students just open up a little bit more. And once they maybe try out just a couple of small things in their lessons, maybe one day they will also dare to, I don't know, organize a poetry slam event with all of their students or a dance performance, whatever. And it's just very nice to see that all of my students just go out of my seminar like also every week and they tell me it's so nice that it's just this actually performative setting here. Everyone feels so safe and so nice, and it's just a different way of learning about things. But they always told me, even though it never felt like we're actually learning something because it's fun, because we're, I don't know, drawing or we're dancing, whatever, it's way better than many other seminars in university because it's not just we're just sitting around and the teacher's telling us something because they try out. And they also said that they really like that they like that I somehow pushed them a little bit towards something that they normally wouldn't have done.
Bit out of their comfort zone.
Exactly, get out of their comfort zone. And yeah, just it's just every semester, like I'm doing it already for a couple of semesters, and it's just always a lot of fun. And every semester, I'm also learning new things and I'm getting inspired every semester. This is the first semester that my students are focusing on cooking. Next week, they actually, we like every week, there's a different group trying out their ideas. So next week, we are doing something on cooking, and I'm very interested to see because it's also the first time for me. So let's see.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You are in the state of Niedersachsen, so in northern Germany, and as our listeners might know or might not know, the German school system kind of has three main types of schools. Are your future teachers, are they training to be teachers at high school or a primary school or a secondary school or everything?
So here in Braunschweig, we basically have everything, but everything in brackets because we don't have like further adult schools, like I don't know what it's called in English, but Berufsbildende Schulen.
Yeah, vocational schools, yeah.
Vocational schools, yes. But my teacher or future teachers here are mostly, especially in English, primary school or high school. And in the German as a foreign language, they're doing this as an extra certificate, and then they try like they choose a different specialization either on children or on young adults or on adults. Most of them actually do children because most of the students here studying German also become primary school teachers. So I basically have all of them.
Everything,
Oh,
yeah, all
applications.
across the board. Okay, because I was just wondering, especially as you said, cooking, because depending on what type of school you go to as a young person yourself, you might go to a school where cooking is not a thing if you go to a gymnasium, high school, but if you go to a secondary school, you might have cooking as a subject. So just thinking about these things, so the practicalities might be very different. For example, if you go to a Hauptschule, cooking might be easier to include because the school has a kitchen, whereas in a gymnasium, maybe not. But that's just and kind of going off on a tangent here.
But they also actually also always say that it's nice that they take this seminar, because I also like when we start with drama and theater, that I always tell them it's going to be hard, some maybe in your school, to find a room, to even get someone to understand you that you want a different room, and so on. And it's just with every art form, it's just you need to, if you want to do it, you need to basically fight for it, and you need to
Be able to improvise, probably.
exactly, and you need to be aware of the fact that it's not just here we are, it's just a little bit of work, sometimes also a little bit more work, to actually get to where you want to.
Yeah, and depending on how academically oriented the school is, it might be harder or easier to convince maybe also colleagues or your, I don't know, your mentor in school to let you do that. Depends. On the other hand, some schools are also more artistically oriented. That might be easier. Yeah, but schools can be very, very different. Yeah, so that sounds quite fascinating. Were there any areas, so you talked about dance already a little bit, and I can understand that, because dance is, you would say, it's very physical, so you no normally don't talk while you're dancing, but you said you talk, can talk about dance, you can talk, learn about history of dance and all of these things. And I think I even once met someone who's doing workshops on using line dance for teaching English as a foreign language, and really kind of teaching students how to do line dance and with all the commands, well, right, left, and turn, and so on. But that's a very kind of very niche approach. But I can see how you have to, as you said, you kind of it's an eye opener for your students, how to think about the different art forms and how you can integrate them with language. And yeah, podcasting, that seems obvious because it's verbal. Theater, kind of verbal too, as well. Verbal and physical.
I also had photography, and very interesting to see that if you actually think about photography, photography as an art form is used in the foreign language classroom a lot, because we work with pictures a lot, but we never understand, or like teachers or also future teachers never actually see it as, oh, I'm actually using something artistic here, as like the art form, photography, pictures, whatever. And then they're always like, ah, you also opened our eyes, because we're already doing a lot of performative things without actually knowing it.
Yeah, okay. But in how far would you say that photography is performative? Is it just performative as doing something physically, or performative as, for example, displaying the pictures at an exhibition, for example? So how is photography performative for you? Just wondering.
I feel like mostly in schools or in whatever kind of teaching context with the foreign languages, photography is mostly, as you just said, displayed, and is one of the varieties of performative photography, let's say, because you can always just look at it and you can describe it, and that's also already performative, because someone already, like someone at some point took this picture, and I don't know, you could also do like a talk, speak about what is the situation about this photographer, and so on and so forth. But as I just said, displaying it is what happens mostly. You could also, in the end, whenever you do something, let the students take pictures, and like actually organize a gallery with different photographers or own photographies, and so on. So in the end, it gets more and more performative once you actually think about it, even though you already somehow also already work perform in a performative way.
So it's formative is more something like action oriented, handlungsorientiert in your definition.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh yeah, okay. Because obviously I guess there are different definitions of what performative entails. And you said you're in the midst of starting to analyze your data, and that it's still kind of a long way probably until you have everything sorted and things connecting and so on. Did you have a hypothesis to start with, or did you have an open question?
I feel like it was a very complicated process. When you write a PhD, you know it's up and down, and you sometimes just want to quit it, and then you love it again, and then you hate it, and so on. So I feel like I started with an open question, but then this open question was not formulated for myself because I just started doing these seminars without thinking about doing it. So in the end, it was in the back of my head and was something that I wasn't actively thinking about. But then more and more, like throughout the semesters, it actually got an open question, like, how can we integrate it? And then I also, like basically this, what I'm asking my students to do, transfer this picture of these four forms, theater education, drama and education, drama education, to transform it into, or to transfer it to different art forms, was something that just came into my mind during my, I think, second seminar or third seminar. So in the end, beforehand, it was a little bit more loose and not that, actually basically based on something. So it just came to my mind more and more.
It's going to be interesting how they're going to do that with cooking, for example.
But yeah, then when I did my, like, the questionnaire and the interviews, I had different hypotheses. And one of them was because I already had the experiences from the previous semesters that they struggle to imagine
The
art
less verbal
less
arts.
verbal art forms, and especially really struggle with art forms that they really don't know what they understand as, for example, circus or artistry.
And just being curious here, have you had students maybe communicate with you after the seminar? Anyone who managed to integrate circus artistry in their teaching? It's a rare form that to be integrated in foreign languages.
So circus artistry, not like no student and none of the students ever came to me afterwards and said we did this, because I still feel like circus artistry is some, like, let's say, too far away from them, and they feel like we cannot really combine it. And in the future, like, you always have these big plans. I really want to one time just do a seminar where I'm like literally throwing all these methods at them and focusing on a different art from every session, but that's something that for my future. But with other art forms, students afterwards came to me and said that we tried this out and we actually dared to do this. And the funny thing is that also other university lecturers here, lecturers always approach me and they say, like, they were inspired by you and now they're doing this or that, or in the teacher training, so the referendariat they're doing, because I'm also knowing these people, they're doing this or that now, and they said they were inspired by you. So I'm very happy to see that I at least got like this role.
So you kind of planted a seed
Exactly.
somewhere. Okay.
And I'm very happy if they just do something smallish instead of nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as I also see as what I mean, I started out as someone teaching languages at university, so two young adults. But currently, I also teach in a school without having had formal teacher training. But I at least I can see sort of how my colleagues work, and I think most of them haven't really encountered this in their own teacher training. I mean, maybe the younger ones, I think it's kind of getting more normal to have this in your teacher education. But I think for the older colleagues, it's not really a thing that they're familiar with. I mean, they might be open to it, but it's something, that's kind of new to them, at least in this way. I mean, of course, they will know role plays, but as you said, maybe this integration of small things throughout the language classroom. Or maybe some teachers realize I've already been doing it, I've just not called it drama and education
Exactly, yeah.
sometimes. So for how many semesters have you taught it? I know you said it before.
I actually haven't said it.
Oh, I thought.
I started it in the summer semester 2021. So
Okay, so in the midst of the pandemic.
exactly. But I was actually lucky because I started in a like in a synchronous format and with my students actually in front of me, and then we had to change towards a digital format, and it actually worked. But then I was happy then the semester afterwards that we could back could go back to person to person. So
Yeah, okay. Yeah, is in especially with the embodied forms of performative arts, yeah, that's definitely easier. Of course, you could also do cooking, like everyone in their own kitchen, which for cooking might actually not be a bad thing, but for most other things where you have to really physically interact with people, of course, synchronous teaching formats are easier. I'm trying to think. So, yeah, summing up, I think your sort of as you also said, your niche. So, as your supervisor said, you have to find this niche is basically opening up the spectrum of arts to your language teacher. So not just drama and theater, but hey, let's look at cooking, photography, karaoke, dance, artistry, everything.
exactly, yeah.
So I will be really curious to read your thesis
It's finished.
once you've evaluated all your data and have written it up. Are there any I mean, you already talked a bit about the challenges that you had and how your students have reacted, and also how they're already, some of them are taking the things they've learned and applying them. What would you say so far has been the biggest challenge in your seminar? So PhD obviously has its different challenges, but in your seminars.
Yeah, I think two challenges actually. One of them is the students many times being like, okay, this is very nice, sounds very nice. And you know, in university, we're always doing these fantastic things, but in the end, how can we do this in reality? Especially, and this word curriculum always is something that always comes from all my of my students. With time, with rooms, with missing teachers, and so on. So this is really a struggle. And I really want to at some point just also, because it's just also during a semester, it's not that much time. I really want to, with my students, sometimes just actually take the curriculum, look at it, and basically show them it's very, like it's written in a very open way. And even though you have to do this and this and this, you can still do it in a performative way, because they always think like, okay, now we have to do a theater, and it's like these four extra lessons of doing something. Whereas you just integrate it as a teaching method, whatever art form we're using, to get to where we want to get anyways. So this is what I really struggle with. And then the second thing is students who really feel uncomfortable standing in front of like the seminar or the rest of the seminar, and always in the end, or always especially in the beginning, thinking if I'm attending the seminar, I always have to be on stage, I have to perform, I have to sing, I have to dance. Whereas from the first seminar on, I'm always making sure that we have this safe space, and everyone who does not feel safe with doing something in whatever art form, in whatever performative way, does not have to do it, and we always find a solution for everyone. And it's not okay, now you go like to what's the side and you do something like a grammar exercise as someone might do it in school, but rather including it, for example, I don't know, let's say they're doing a play and now you're responsible for the lighting or you're doing the costumes, whatever. But still you communicate with the others, but I don't ask you to stand in front of all of us to perform. So this is what I also struggle with, because in the beginning, it's also sometimes why students here at the university don't choose my seminar, because I feel like they have to do all of this. And in the end, I could also, like in the course description, I could write down, you don't have to perform, but I never did because I always had enough students. But yeah, something that I've struggled with, yeah.
Yeah, well, that yeah, both kind of sound like familiar challenges to me. Yeah, absolutely. So, curriculum and assessment, especially,
Oh, yeah.
and I think it probably pays off or will pay off if you ever have the time to really try to take that apart and show them how it can be integrated. Because I kind of know this reaction that, oh, we might do it as an add-on when we have time and when we don't have to. That's kind of a familiar reaction. So yeah, if you can manage to really show how it can be integrated into the whole school year, that would be fantastic, I guess. And I also know the reservation of no, I don't want to act in front of people. Yeah, absolutely. And I think you've already talked a bit about kind of the benefits and rewards. What would you say kind of was the biggest gain or the biggest reward so far for you? I mean, you said you always learn lots of new things from every seminar as well.
So with every seminar and with all of my different students, I basically learn I learn about different methods, approaches, ways of using different art forms in the foreign language classroom. This is just one very nice thing, like content-wise. But in the end, like my smile moment was when I actually did like this seminar last summer semester, where I did this questionnaire and the interviews, because it was the first time that you actually felt like you got feedback from your students. Because normally in university you teach, seminar is over, and of course there's this obligatory question at the end, how did you like the seminar? But all of the students are always doing it because they have to do it, and in every seminar they're doing it in the same week, and then they feel tired of it. So you don't really know how serious you can take this. But when I did these interviews afterwards, it was, if I felt like, okay, because sometimes when, like with this niche topic or with this, let's do something performative, you sometimes feel like, oh, I'm this kind of weird theater guy that sometimes also people like literally call me, especially the ones that don't know me. But then I felt like, okay, I don't have to feel weird anymore, because I feel like I'm, as you said, I planted a seed. And it's not for nothing, and that people understand me, why I'm doing this. Maybe they don't understand the fully 100%, because that's also normal, because I haven't actually taught it yet or used it. But at least I felt like I felt understand, and this is just meant a lot to me in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my colleague and friend Eva Göksel, who you know through the DIE days, I think she's been through a slightly similar journey at the University of Teacher Education in Zug, where she kind of started a drama and education approach, and that was also what her PhD was about. So it sounds kind of like similar experiences. Yeah, so it's often, I think, the situation that there's some weird theater person at a university all by themselves and trying to kind of plant the seeds for this approach because they're passionate about it. So I think that's a very familiar phenomenon in a
Yeah.
way.
But also, what I just realized is what happened is that throughout the years, many people in the, let's say, art area know, or like I know them now and they know me now. And
So you said that you're making connections, for example, to other, well, let's say, education to adult education institutions. Can you say a little bit more about that? Because we were just briefly interrupted by technical problems.
yeah. So as I said, more and more people, like also in the arts area, actually got to know me. And also, I was about to say that in the adult education area, there are people that are contacting me more and more, because I also did like a workshop for the teachers at the adult school. And then they were like, okay, can you not really do a course here where you actually do, well, like, for example, with refugees, like a course where we do, where you implement a theater or a play. And yeah, so then in the end, this makes me also very happy, because in like I can see that people are interested in it, and they feel like it is something that could be beneficial for whatever kind of students we have in front of us.
Okay, so that's really, really good to hear that this kind of opens up new possibilities and new connections. I think I would wrap up. So thank you very much for telling me about your research and also your teaching. And yeah, I wish you all the best for sort of handling your data and successful seminars, especially with cooking. Maybe I don't know, maybe at the next Drama and Education Days you can give a presentation on that and see how performative cooking integrates with language teaching.
I could, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, also thank you. And for the ones that are actually listening, if you ever have any questions or feel like you want to do something with me or whatever, feel free to contact me. Just Google me and you'll find me.
Okay, and I can include the link probably to your university page in the notes to the podcast as well.
Sure.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.